You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
And welcome to Mighty Marvel Geeks. I am your host, Mike, and joining us, as always, is Ken.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight, Ken?
I'm doing good. I feel like we already did this.
Deja vu. Yeah. So welcome again to Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio. Joining us this week, we got a special guest, Disney Imagineer, Marvel fanboy, actually involved with a little Disney Marvel crossover projects, Brian Crosby. How you doing tonight, Brian?
Hello. I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, not a problem.
Welcome.
So, I guess we'll hit the early stuff. How did you get involved with Disney, or get into Disney Imagineering?
That goes back to 2005. I was still in school. I was going to I was studying illustration here at California State Fullerton, and a friend of mine had told me about a design competition that Imagineering was doing, and it was called Imaginations. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not, but essentially what it is it was Walt Disney Imagineering's program, if you will, to try and find new diverse talent for the parks and resorts. And basically what the idea was is we had to get together as a team and design an attraction or a hotel or a park or a restaurant or whatever, and then submit that idea and hopefully be selected and advance throughout the competition. So bad news is our concept didn't advance for one reason or another, but I was interviewed and talked to. They liked my art and what I brought to the table, and I was brought in as an intern to Imagineering that summer, where I worked in what we call the IRC. It's basically our research library, and and there I got to get to know a lot of Imagineers and some of the things that they were working on and involved in, and show them my art and get feedback. And after my internship, I was hired full-time in September of 2005, and I've been here ever since.
Awesome. So they liked your art, but not the idea.
No, that's not what happened. But make no mistake, the idea was cool. No, the idea was we pitched it for it was a Rocketeer concept for Disney's California Adventure. And we thought, oh, it's 1930s Hollywood. That's such a great fit. And so we came up with this story about what you were doing. You're testing out these new rocket packs, and I submitted storyboards to look like an old 1930s pulp comic book. And that's what they like. I think they liked the approach and hopefully the creativity we brought to the project. But two of us that were involved, Josh Stedman being the other, who's also now a creative director working out in Shanghai, on Shanghai Disneyland, he and I both came in to Imagineering.
Well, that's cool.
But it was a cool idea. It was awesome.
Yeah, it sounds great. it sounds like something that could fit out here at now Disney Hollywood Studios.
Well, you never know what can happen, right?
This is
good. Ideas never die, my friend.
Now, how did you become, I guess, initially a fan of Marvel growing up?
Oh, well, I mean, that goes back to my early childhood, right? I think my first awareness of Marvel... I shouldn't even say Marvel, because as a kid, I didn't really know the difference between DC and Marvel and what all these comic book companies were. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends was my first introduction to those characters, and I became a big-time Iceman fanboy. I thought Iceman was a pretty awesome character. But I didn't really get into I got into, you know, comic books when I was about 10, but then when it was when I was in junior high, a good friend of mine introduced me to the X-Men. This was right around the time when Jim Lee was getting involved and all those guys, and Todd McFarlane was drawing Spider-Man. And so obviously I fell in love with all those characters. They didn't look like any comic books that I had seen before. They were fresh and dynamic and, you know, pushing the boundaries, and characters were exploding off the page. And so I really fell in love with now the Marvel style and the Marvel characters, how relatable they were. And so it really was Spidey and His Amazing Friends, first introduction, but then the comic books, it was really the X-Men.
Well, just to help you relive that, I have a small snippet.
Ah! Oh.
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iceman and Firestar.
Yeah, you'll never know what I'll pull out of the bag here.
Oh my God, that makes me want to cry, man. That's beautiful.
I think I kind of started out the same way as well, watching, you know, the cartoon.
Yeah.
Blossom, and I've been an X-Men fan since the, you know, like mid '80s. You know. But there was a little stale period in the X-Men until like the, you know.
Well,
you were talking that time. You were talking with Jim Lee and those guys.
Well, I think for a lot of our generation, it was Spider-Man that was the first introduction. I know for me, it was Spider-Man and Electric Company.
Electric Company, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But of course, you know, Spider-Man, The Amazing Friends, a little Fantastic Four with the Herbie days. And that's what kind of led me to, a little bit towards Marvel, but comic-wise, I was more Avengers, West Coast, and Captain America.
That's awesome.
So you've been working on some Marvel projects for Disney.
Yeah.
One of the first was the monorails.
Yeah, that was actually the very first thing we got to do with Marvel. As you can imagine, when the acquisition of Marvel Entertainment took place, there was a lot of excitement on our side, for sure, on the Disney side, getting to play with a whole new cast of characters, characters that I have been super passionate about and loved, you know, pretty much my whole life. To get to play in that sandbox all of a sudden was really exciting. And so those of us that are the big Marvel fanboys here at Imagineering, you know, we got excited about, you know, what the possibilities could be. And so immediately started brainstorming and coming up with new ideas. And the very first thing that came out of that was to help promote Avengers. Obviously, sure. It was a big movie that everybody was really excited about. We knew it was going to be just, you know, over the top, amazing. And I was approached to design a monorail wrap, if you will, for the Avengers. And so through that, I got to know the guys over at Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, Craig Kyle, and, you know, so on and so forth. And those guys have been amazing partners. They're super Disney fanboys on the one hand, and they're also Marvel fanboys. And so to be able to bring these two things together was very exciting. And I know Kevin, he was super pumped about the Avengers monorail. Just to have the Avengers on a Disney World monorail got him super pumped. And from what I understand, when we released that first video on YouTube of the Avengers monorail going around the loop, he brought all the guys in over at Marvel Studios, and they watched this on this little 2-minute video up on the big screen and kind of nerded out on that, which was very flattering to me. So that was cool.
Now, why did we see that monorail more on the Magic Kingdom line than the Epcot line?
Well, without getting too much into that, I mean, it's really a legal issue. We needed to have, because of the Universal contracts existing the way they are, you could only run the Marvel content on the Magic Kingdom line. And so that's why it ran over that. And so that one and Iron Man 3 as well, both were on that loop.
Okay.
But what the fun part was in designing those was to not, you know, my goal was to not make them look like a bus wrap or anything like right. that. With Avengers, I wanted it to look like a SHIELD vehicle and make the Avengers as close to life size as possible. I mean, obviously they have to be a little bit exaggerated so that they're readable.
Right.
If you'll notice that design, it's got the SHIELD logo on there. The characters are all grouped together as a team, and that was a lot of fun. And then with Iron Man 3, it was the same approach, wanting it to look like Stark Industries. You know, if Iron Man took his design aesthetic and applied that to the monorail, what would an armored Iron Man vehicle look like, and have the, you know, Iron Man and Iron Patriot flying alongside? So I know those were they were you know, not too terribly complex to create, but it was fun just to finally bring Disney and Marvel together in that way.
Right. Okay. What's like the process of getting them on the monorail? Does that take a long time, or is it like a wrap material, or what goes on in that process?
It's like a wrap. It actually functions, you know, the process of getting it on is exactly like a bus wrap.
Mm-hmm.
The approach is the same. The only place it's different are on the nose cars, because of those being the way they are, we don't wrap those, so we actually painted them.
Oh, wow.
So with the Avengers, we painted that a high gloss black, and for Iron Man 3, we painted that gold. And so with Iron Man 3 in particular, I really wanted that to almost look like it was Iron Man flying right at you. So if you look at the Iron Man 3 monorail, when it's coming straight down the line, it's supposed to be evocative of Iron Man's head with a little arc reactor down at the bottom. Not for his RT. That was the intent.
Awesome.
Now, you've also done some work with the Marvel exhibits over at California, at Disneyland, correct?
I can't say that I was, you know, I wasn't primarily responsible for those in any way. You know, Jason Sorrell, a good friend of mine, he wrote those stories for Iron Man and Thor, and Brad Kay, a brilliant designer in his own right. He worked on those. I just consulted. It just so happens that Jason Sorrell at that time was sitting in the office right next to mine, and so we would bounce ideas off each other. We were working on various other projects together, and so he and I became, you know, really good friends through that. And you know, so I threw in some ideas here and there where I could, but really Jason and Brad deserve the credit for that.
Okay. Now, how did you go from working with the park stuff to Disney Kingdoms, the Marvel title?
Well, that's a cool story, and one that Joe Quesada actually he talked about. I think it was at New York Comic Con last year when we started talking about this officially for the first time. That story was pretty cool. I mean, as I mentioned before, there was a lot of excitement around on our side about, you know, what can Disney do with Marvel, right? What can we do with these this great cast of characters? But one thing we started to discuss internally, primarily myself and Josh Shipley and Jim Clark, who are part of the Disney Kingdoms team, we started to discuss what would it look like if Marvel did something with Disney. So what, you know, if Marvel does what they do best in creating, you know, these amazing comic books, if they took the Disney cast of characters, in particular the theme park stuff, the theme park IP that we're responsible for, and brought that into their world. Yes, the idea being, you know, much like the Pirates of the Caribbean film franchises, right, where you kind of get to do a deeper dive into those stories, learn new characters, explore new worlds, but have, you know, moments that harken back to the attraction themselves. That was the idea with Disney Kingdoms. And so how that all came about was actually Josh and I, we went to an Angels baseball game here in Anaheim with Joe Quesada. Joe's a massive baseball fan, so he and I bonded very quickly through our conversations here over baseball. And so we said, hey, we should go catch a game sometime. And I think it was around the time of D23, if I'm not mistaken, the last D23, where we went to the game with Joe and talking about one thing or another. And, you know, my little hidden agenda was to pitch him this idea for Disney Kingdoms, and we weren't actually sure if he was into it or not. I mean, he said, "Oh, okay, yeah, sounds cool," and we didn't really hear from him for a while. It was a few months later he emailed Josh and I and said, "Hey, that little idea you guys had about Disney theme park comics, we're interested," and that's really what got the ball rolling. And then
we planted the seed.
Yeah, exactly. It was there, and little did we know that Joe was back in New York, pitching the idea to the guys over there, and got several of them extremely interested. In particular, David Gabriel, who really got the ball rolling, and making sure Disney Kingdoms became a reality. And then there's a whole team of people over there now. Bill Roseman, who's our amazing editor, and Mark Basso as well, who are doing a tremendous job bringing these characters to life, and we're definitely involved as well. But really, those guys are doing a tremendous job in carrying the torch here.
Okay, now how did Seekers of the Weird end up being the first book? Was that a collaboration with y'all and Marvel, or was it a Marvel's call?
It was a collaboration for sure. So once we decided that we were going to do Disney Kingdoms, we kind of came up with our bucket list of which attractions we think would be cool to give this treatment, this comic book treatment. And, you know, we came up with our list, and we, you know, which was a list comprised of things that, you know, us on the Disney side, I mentioned Josh and Jim before, also Tom Morris, who became part of our team. As we started to discuss which ideas we'd get excited about. And then we submitted that list to Marvel and said, here's the ones we can do. Here's the ones we'd like to do. And they went through the list and we talked about each one. And I think, Museum of the Weird quickly rose to the top of that list for a number of reasons. Jim Clark and I had been bantering the idea of Museum of the Weird back and forth quite a bit. We actually had talked about it as a comic book at one point, even before we bought Marvel, just because we thought there was so much potential with Museum of the Weird and what Walt and Rolly Crump had come up with. You know, such amazing designs, such strange characters, and you know, having ties to the Haunted Mansion, and just the name Museum of the Weird. That sounds awesome. I want to go there. I want to know what that is. And so I think Marvel caught that idea too. They caught that vision. And so Museum of the Weird became our first choice. We decided, because it wasn't an attraction that had ever been built, we really had a lot of creative freedom there to totally invent, new characters, and definitely have a lot of the Rolly stuff in there, and we worked with Rolly as well, and he consulted with us and talked to us about, told us all the amazing stories about what happened in the Museum of the Weird, some of the things he never got to fully flesh out, even what would the exterior look like, which is something that we never saw in any of his art pieces, which we've now been able to explore in the comic book. So I think there's a lot of creative freedom in that, and so it was very fun and very exciting to do that one first out of the gate, and it prepares us in many ways for some of the, I don't want to say hurdles, but challenges in approaching attractions that are built and that people do know and do have characters that they associate with. So Seekers was a good first choice for us for that reason.
So in many ways, y'all kind of created a magical moment for Rolly getting to bring the Museum of the Weird to fruition. When there was the possibility it might not ever happen, or at least some aspect.
Yeah, and I don't know, how familiar you and your listeners are, with kind of the history of the Museum of the Weird or the Disney side of it. But Museum of the Weird was actually announced by Walt Disney back in 1965 on the Tencennial television special. There were four attractions announced on that special: Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, It's a Small World, and Museum of the Weird. So three of the four that were built, arguably some of the most amazing, creative, and brilliant attractions we've ever built at Disney. And here was this little idea, the Museum of the Weird, that never saw the light of day. And so that in and of itself captured our imaginations on the Disney side about what that could be. When I first heard that story, I got super excited about it, and that was a long time ago. Like, when I first started working at Disney, I became aware of it. So Museum of the Weird has been on our minds for quite a while. And then to be able to share that with Rolly, you know, at his home, and show him designs of the characters we had created, including Uncle Roland, who's obviously named after him. I'll admit, when I designed that character, I was a little nervous to show Rolly. I was just praying that he would like it. And you know, he did, and it was a lot of fun to get his blessing on that. And here it is 50 years later, after Museum of the Weird gets announced on that television special, and now to have it actually see the light of day in the form of a comic book, for him was very exciting, I know. So it showed up in a way that he never imagined it would, but it arrived nevertheless. There you go.
And then he's immortalized in the comic book window of sorts,
right,
which is a Disney tradition on Main Street, be it here or California.
Yeah, Rolly's he's an amazing guy, brilliant designer, obviously, which, you know, we all know who have enjoyed his creations for decades now. So it's been a pleasure to play in his world a little bit.
Now we know last week Marvel sent out the press release about the Figment, which comes out next month. What can you tell us a little bit on the Figment title?
Yeah, Figment's an exciting one. I think we caught some people off guard by making that our next choice. It's not the obvious pick, which is why we like it. we have an amazing creative team. Again, Bill Roseman and Mark Basso are back, you know, on the editorial helm. David Gabriel again is involved, and then our Imagineering team is carrying forward on that one. But we have two new creators, our primary creative team, Jim Zub, who's crafting a brilliant story, which is really, the book is titled Figment, but it's really an origin story for Dreamfinder.
Yeah.
And then Felipe Andrade is doing the interior art, and you know, every day, you know, to get an email from Bill and Mark with some of these new pages as they come in, you know, Felipe is just really knocking it out of the park visually, and you know, he's really nailed Figment, in our opinion. You know, interpreting it in his own way, as great comic book artists do, but definitely maintaining the spirit of that attraction. And so I think we're having a lot of fun revisiting that story and revisiting Dreamfinder. And Tom Morris, who's on our team at Disney, having worked on the original attraction, Journey into Imagination at Epcot, I think it's been a blast for him to revisit those characters. Yeah. So we're excited about it. I think it's really a beautiful book. It's really imaginative, really strange and grounded in reality, and then takes these you know really unexpected turns and explores new realms of you know, imagination and creativity, and hopefully it empowers the readers to imagine themselves and invent and create new things. Because I think that's what, when Disney stories are at their best, they are both, you know, entertaining but also inspirational,
right,
and aspirational. And I think that's what Disney's always done best. Those are the hallmarks of a good Disney story, and I think this one definitely hits that mark.
Yeah, I know. For myself, I can't speak for Ken. When it was announced as Spark, as the tease, and seeing the purple and orange with it, it's like, this has got to be Figment. It's got to be. And Ken and I both started it. Well, Ken started at Epcot, right, Ken?
Yes, I started at Epcot.
And you're now at Downtown Disney, but I started off at Studios, and now at Epcot, and been at Epcot for many years. Figment's just a big part of Epcot, so to bring that story to life and to see
get some backstory,
and to see the preview pages that came with the press release, I'm excited about this book. And of course, you were involved as an assist on one of the variant covers.
Yeah, so I did a variant cover for each issue of Seekers of the Weird, and that was super awesome, right? I mean, that's super nerd out time. Check the bucket list. I got to do a Marvel cover. Definitely awesome. And then for Figment, we thought, you know, Tom should really do this one. You know, let him kind of revisit these characters and revisit Figment in particular. And so I think he had a lot of fun doing a comic book cover for the first time in his career. And he's accomplished many, many things that people have enjoyed all over the world, in Paris in particular. And so he illustrated it, and I inked and painted his cover. So that was a lot of fun for me to get involved in that one as well. So, you know, we have a new set of variant covers coming for Figment number one. And the main cover you've already seen, right, which is ridiculous and awesome.
It's amazing.
And we've already seen our first cosplayer as Young Dreamfinder, which was
really
super cool. Yeah, I forget where it was. Josh Shipley, somebody contacted him on Facebook and sent him a picture. I think it was some Pennsylvania con, and there was, sure enough, there was a guy cosplaying as Young Dreamfinder directly from that cover. So, yay, wow, that was cool. You know, that felt like we'd done something.
Awesome, awesome. I know you and I have talked, because you know, trying to hunt down your variant covers. How does it feel to know for your first set of comic book covers that they are so rare and hard to find? And when you do find them, they're pricey.
Well, truthfully, I have kind of mixed feelings on that.
Because you want everybody to have it.
On the one hand, it's kind of flattering. I mean, I'm glad they're valuable and people are trying to track them down. I mean, that's cool. But on the other hand, I'd really just prefer everybody to be able to get one. Especially, you know, my friends who are buying them online. I get a couple from Marvel. They're great about sharing some with us. But, you know, those immediately go to Mom and my wife.
Right.
You know, maybe a couple friends here and there, but yeah, I wish everybody could get one. I know sometimes they're hard to track down, but really grateful for those people who have, you know, reached out and maybe spent a few more dollars to try and track down my variant. It's very flattering.
Yeah. Do you know if any of your variant covers are going to be in the hardback that's coming out?
That's a good question. I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that one. I'm sorry. Because I know when we initially talked about the collection, we talked about including a lot of the character designs that I had done. I designed, you know, all the characters for Seekers. Uncle Roland was a blast to design, and I, you know, as I'm illustrating him, it definitely felt like we were creating our Jack Sparrow, our Willy Wonka, if you will, you know, kind of our guy who's going to be an icon for this book. And so that was a lot of fun. So I'm hoping some of those designs make it in. And then also the different logos that we went through to create the logo for Seekers. That was fun, too. And I actually just finished the logo for Figment today. So
awesome.
So, yeah, we're getting to see those covers come out now, you know, so I think they're looking great. They're looking really beautiful.
Very cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break because we're up against a break, and we'll be right back with Brian after these messages.
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio, version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app, version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better, stronger, faster.
Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next.
Hot dog!
Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge.
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness.
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Rebel Force Radio. With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack. Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sorcerer Radio. SRSounds.com.
Chip and Company is your daily Disney fix for Disney news, park planning, giveaways, and so much more. Visit our friends from Chip and Company at chipandco.com to get you up to date on all things Disney.
A magic beyond anything you could ever imagine.
Meet the Magic is a site where you can find Disney sites, blogs, and find new Disney friends. Learn how to save money or make your trip more magical.
Prepare to have your senses awakened.
Visit meetthemagic.com and follow her on Twitter at meetthemagic, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
It's an adventure too magical to miss.
Woohoo! That was scary.
Dan Barnes here, inviting you to take a ride with me on an all-new edition of E-Ticket Time. I'll be playing the best ride-through audio from all your favorite Walt Disney World attractions. No fast pass required here. Just tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern, only on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com.
I am a Jedi. Like my father before me.
Are you a fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel? Well, look no further than JediMouseketeer.com. On this geeky fan site, you'll find the latest news, videos, information on movies, comics, and more. Check out JediMouseketeer.com and follow him on Twitter at JediMouseketeer, a proud partner of Sorcerer Radio.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Getting ready for your next visit to Walt Disney World? Well, why not check out Disney Trip Tips Fridays at 1 p.m. on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com with me, Sandy Alexander. Disney favorites from the parks, resorts, movies, and TV, and the tips that the family and I have used on our many visits to Walt Disney World. And if you have any tips or photos you'd like to share, you can post them at the Disney Trip Tips Facebook page. You can even follow me on Twitter at Disney Trip Tips. Disney Trip Tips on Sorcerer Radio. All Disney music all day long. SR Sounds.
And welcome back to Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio. It's Mike, Ken, and joining us is our special guest, Disney Imagineer, Brian Crosby. Brian, we usually do, I think as you know, because you reached out to us saying you're a fan of the show, you know we do our picks of the week for the upcoming new comic book day. Do you have any books that, you know, really you are must haves for you for the month?
That would be a whole other show. picking out all the books that I'm reading. I am a comic book junkie. I read way too many books. Believe me, my wife would be the first one to tell you that I read way too many books. I love the medium, right? It's the perfect marriage of, art and storytelling and, you're allowed to use your own imagination and fill in the gaps. And, I've loved comic books, basically since I was 10 years old when I got my first one.
Do you still get the books or do you do the whole online thing now?
You know what? I've tried the online thing. I still do it a little bit. I'm a little bit more of a purist, I think. I enjoy going to the comic book store on Wednesday here in Burbank with actually our Disney Kingdoms team for the most part and a few others. We call it Ta Comics Day because we always go get our comic books and then we immediately go to Taco Bell. That's our Wednesday routine.
That's what it's about. you know, going to the shop and, yep, you know, being around the people and the books and, you know, not being so isolated like you would with the online, with the app or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, you know, comics are comics. I think whether you read digitally or physical book, you know, whatever, as long as you're reading comics, I think that's a cool thing. But I think I really get a kick out of being at the store and being around the other, you know, feeding off that vibe. Mm-hmm. So as for my picks, I've got a few. So obviously, I'm going to exclude the Disney Kingdom stuff because Disney, you told me to think about the month, right? So I was thinking about this month. So Seekers comes out on the 21st, I believe.
Yep.
And then Figment number 1 comes out on June 4th, I believe.
Yes.
So that's the way, so that's how those shape up. And I'm not going to pick those because that's too easy, right? So the books that I've got a whole laundry list of books that I read every month, but without fail, I always read Daredevil. I love Daredevil a whole lot. Mark Waid is doing a brilliant job with that character, as so many people now know.
Mm-hmm.
So Waid and Samnee doing Daredevil has been awesome. And then to actually take him out of Hell's Kitchen is a really bold move. In San Francisco, we've been able to kind of see a new side to the character, so it's been kind of fun. Who knows if he'll make it back to Hell's Kitchen? You know, we have a little Netflix show coming out later.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see him eventually go back to Hell's Kitchen. But so Daredevil, Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm loving by Bendis and McNiven. It's definitely capturing the feel of the movie. So I think definitely pay attention to what's happening in that book. And then two others that I'm really jazzed about right now. I'm loving Black Widow. I think it's really, you know, beautifully illustrated and, you know, much the kind of the Hawkeye way of presenting the character. You're getting a little bit of insight into what she's like when she's not Black Widow, but also doing Black Widow stuff. So Black Widow's been fun, and I'm enjoying Declan Shelby's Moon Knight, which is not a big time mainstream character, but it's a really cool, fun book, and he's actually a really quirky, cool character. So I recommend Moon Knight.
Okay. Now, just out of curiosity,
yeah,
any of the books that Ken and I have recommended as a made you go, I need to check that out.
I'll be honest, no, only because I'm already reading. I'm reading them all. So there wasn't a major revelation of, oh, I got to read that. I'm not trying to be boastful in any way.
Mike's pick of the all-new Dupe number 1 didn't make you want to go out and buy it? Or did you already buy it? Did you already have the Dupe?
I did not pick up Dupe.
I must be the only one.
Hey, man, teach his own, right? I didn't read Dupe, so I can't speak positively or negatively about it. But, I mean, there's so many great books. I'm still enjoying Iron Man. Let's see, what else am I really digging right now? The new Hulk series is cool. Thor, God of Thunder. Hello, Jason Aaron. Killing it on Thor, God of Thunder. Just an amazing, amazing book. Let's see, what else am I reading? I'm looking at my rack over here. Superior Spider-Man. I know it's now over, and we're now into Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Superior Spider-Man was a book that I think we had no business liking. But it was so good.
Yeah.
It's the guilty pleasure.
It was totally a guilty pleasure. You're like, this shouldn't be good. Like, this shouldn't be as enjoyable as it is. But
why? What? Why am I reading this?
I know. But props to Dan Slott. He crafted an amazing story. So I'm looking forward to what happens with now with Peter Parker back in the saddle. Spoiler alert for those who aren't caught up. But Amazing Spider-Man is back. And as long as Humberto Ramos is drawing, count me in, because I love that guy's stuff.
Hold on one second, I'll be right back.
And there's a couple of cool Guardians of the Galaxy tie-ins coming, or there's the tie-in number 2 to the movie, and then there's a Thanos annual as well this month. So there's some really cool stuff coming up that I'm excited about.
Excellent. Well, Ken, let's go ahead and start with your picks, or your first pick, and we'll see what Brian thinks of our picks for this week.
Well, since we've already spoken about this one, it would be Amazing Spider-Man number 2, because Peter Parker is back, and we're going to see what happens this time around with him.
Okay.
Not a lot, of course.
My first pick for May 21st, which is the new comic book day, I went with it again for the second month. All new Dupe number 2.
Here we go with the Dupe.
That's awesome.
It's one of those.
The Dupe.
I like the off the wall characters. just like with the other company, I've picked an off-wall character over there to follow, and that's Larfleeze over in the DC Universe. It's just one of those. I think it makes me unique for liking something that's not mainstream. And with Dupe, it's a 5-issue run, so I'm looking forward to see where they go with Dupe.
That's awesome. Stay strong, my friend.
Yes. So your number two pick, Ken.
My number two pick is Original Sin number two, and I'm picking this because I want to know who shot the Watcher.
Well, this whole Original Sin crossover is, I'm liking it for the fact that they're drawing the original sins of some of the characters as well in the crossover issues,
mm-hmm.
Which is making it very unique. And then hopefully at the end of the 8 issues of Original Sin, we find out who was the murderer of
who shot Uatu
and why. So
yeah, no, I'm also excited for Original Sin as well. I think, you know, I'm a sucker for a good crime story, a murder mystery, if you will. So, and then to make that Uatu be at the end of that bullet or whatever is definitely intriguing for sure.
Well, my second pick is Deadpool Annual number 2. It's Deadpool. What do you got to say?
Oh my gosh. Is Deadpool not like the most hilarious book?
Yes. The
fantastic.
The wedding issue, you know, some of the other spin-offs, was it Deadpool in the Night of the Living Dead?
Are you guys do you read the letters column?
No. I have not.
You have to read the letters column. The letters column at the end of Deadpool is worth the price of admission. It's hilarious.
Well,
I think it's a tie for best letters column between Deadpool and Thor: God of Thunder. Both awesome.
So you hear it here from Brian. Check out the letters column.
Those of your listeners are agreeing with me right now. I promise you.
Like Mike, you need to go back and read the letters column.
Yes, we're going to have to. So what's your third pick, Ken?
My third pick is George Romero's Empire of the Dead, number 5. I picked it just because I've picked all the other ones. Continuing with the story.
It's George. How can you not go wrong with George? So, well, my third pick, I think, this is going to be right up Brian's alley. And I've been consistent with it every month. And I'm probably going to be consistent with it for the next 5 months. Disney Kingdom's Secrets of the Weird, number 5. This wraps up the Museum of the Weird, and we find out.
Brian, he's not picking this just because you're on the show. Trust me, he picks this every time it comes up. So
I know. I've heard him. I've heard the shout outs. I listen to your show. So thank you very much for continuing to pick it. I'm glad you're digging it.
It's amazing, and I know with Figment, I almost need to pick up 2 copies because my wife's already going, can't wait to read the Figment story. I'm going to have to get a second copy just so I can read one, because she's not going to give it up. She's not going to give it up.
That's awesome. Well, you'll have to let me know what you think of the conclusion of Seekers. I'll tell you this, probably the highest compliment that we have seen online for Seekers was that it felt like an early 80s Disney film, or in the spirit of Goonies. And if you guys are anything like me, there's no higher compliment, right? I mean, that... Yeah. For us that are involved, we're like, mission accomplished as far as we're concerned.
I think the impression I've had with reading Disney Kingdoms is to me, it's a blend of like Escape from Witch Mountain meets the Goonies.
Fair enough.
And I've enjoyed the ride. I've enjoyed that ride. I've heard some people say, well, I'm not interested because it's too much like Ripley's or Night at the Museum. I'm like, no, it's totally different. If you're not familiar with Museum of the Weird itself, you know, like we talked about in the first half, and if you're not just a Disney file, then yeah, you're going to be lost. But knowing a little bit about it and see how it evolved, it's just one of those rides. I can't wait for the movie to come out. in many ways, it can make a great movie.
We're with you. Obviously, those decisions are way out of my hands. But yes, that would be very cool.
If not a movie, a great animation. Weekly animation as well. So that's our picks for May 21st. And, of course, the monthly suggestions from Brian, which his monthly suggestions, again, were Daredevil, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Widow, and Moon Knight. And the cool thing about Marvel going and getting the physical copy from your local comic book store is they come with the code. So you can go right to the Marvel app or go to marvel.com/redeem, redeem the code, and you got your digital copy right there. It's two books in one.
So what more can you ask for?
You can't beat that. It's a bargain deal. You don't get that from other companies a lot of times. So, I know talk has been the possibility of Guardians of the Galaxy showing up at Walt Disney World. And of course, we know with the legalities, as we talked about earlier with Universal, how could that particular property end up at Walt Disney World?
I think there are any number of ways that it could show up. Obviously, you know, we're not prepared to announce anything right now.
Right.
But I think, you know, we're excited for the movie. We're hoping it does really well. The characters are, you know, really strange and different and quirky, and we love that there are new worlds to explore that we're gonna see in the film. So who knows? I mean, as a fanboy, I would love to see us do something. But you know, we'll see what happens. It's exciting, right?
Yes.
The potential is there. I'll say that, right?
Now, is there a loophole that would allow that to happen?
No loophole. Pretty clear.
Okay. They're not at Universal, so they could potentially show up here. Very cool. So they show up, just no Marvel tag.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Believe me, I know the ins and outs of this illegal thing. I don't want to get into that. That's a mess.
Yes, it is. What future projects are you working on without getting into the tease that we have for the end of the show? Is there any projects, be it Marvel or non-Marvel, that you're working on that you could talk about?
Oh, that I can talk about? I mean, as a concept designer, most of what we work on will never see the light of day. And I think that's just something as a concept guy, you just got to get used to. You know, you try not to get too emotionally invested in any one project. That is easier said than done, right? Especially when we're dealing with, you know, characters that we love and care about and places that we'd love to go and things we'd like to see and go, oh, this idea is so brilliant. It's so perfect. It's going to make the park amazing and people love it all around the world. And sometimes those ideas just don't happen for one reason or another. So most of what I'm working on right now is in that stratosphere. It's pretty high level. So nothing that I can really talk about today other than what has already been announced.
You're involved on the Iron Man experience?
Yeah, actually. This is one that I've been involved with for quite a long time, since its inception, actually. And so it's fun to actually start to think about how this might show up in Hong Kong Disneyland. As I mentioned, Hong Kong is going through tremendous expansion right now. Such amazing attractions have already been added, Mystic Manor and Grizzly Gulch and Toy Story Land. It's a tremendous time for that park. And if you haven't been, make a point of going, especially in 2016, which I think will be especially interesting for your Marvel fans, when we open and debut the Iron Man experience. Tom Staggs made the announcement a little while back. It was a super exciting day for us as the Iron Man experience team to finally be able to unveil the notion that the Stark Expo is coming to Hong Kong Disneyland. If you remember Iron Man 2, the Stark Expo in particular was a tremendous segment of that, one that we fell in love with in particular here at Disney because of its Disney connection, right? There's definitely some Disney DNA in there. You get Richard Sherman's original song. You get that connection to Flushing Meadows, New York, and obviously that's connection to Disney, the 64-65 World's Fair. So we fell in love with the Stark Expo, and I think when we first started talking about the Stark Expo with Kevin Feige, I think he said, I tried to lure you guys in with that one. I'm glad to see you took the bait. great. And so I think what we're excited about doing is imagining how the Stark Expo looks and feels for the Hong Kong audience, right? As I mentioned, these characters all live in our world. And the challenge in bringing them to a Disney park is the Disney parks are worlds of fantasy, of yesterday and tomorrow. So how do you bring characters that live and breathe in our world, despite their fantastic things that they do, how do you bring them in and make them fit seamlessly into that world? And I think, you know, we quickly latched on to Tony Stark and, you know, he's such a compelling character. He's funny, he's quirky, he's arrogant, but he's also a hero at the same time. And I think there's a tremendous story there. His popularity is global. And so the notion of bringing the Stark Expo to Hong Kong was tremendously exciting for us. And so I think what guests are going to see, and I'm not going to reveal everything, just a little tease here, but guests are going to get a little taste of the Stark Expo. They're going to see some of the exhibits, some of the Tony Stark's greatest inventions, in particular, one new one that's going to take us on a test flight through the city. And as you can imagine, with every great Marvel story, there is a great villain. And when Tony Stark unleashes his inventions on the world, sometimes trouble follows. And so, you know, we'll be caught up in an epic flight adventure through the skies of Hong Kong, which ultimately leads to us teaming up with Iron Man in a true Marvel story. And we're working very closely with Kevin Feige and his team at Marvel Studios. And we brought in Jeff Loeb and Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley and a lot of these names that, you know, as Marvel fans, we're familiar with. So to have them come in, hear the pitch, give us, you know, great notes, has been a lot of fun. And I think we're excited to finally share this one with the world. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be really fun. And the monorails are one thing, and those were a blast, but to bring the first Marvel ride, the first Marvel attraction to a Disney park, is personally, I think it's a bit historic, and it's also a tremendous honor to be a part of it. So we're having a lot of fun, and I can't wait for you guys to check
it out. Start saving up now to make it over there.
So am I to assume then, with this little tease, this is the first anyone involved with the project has talked about it since Tom's announcement?
I believe so. You guys are getting the exclusive here.
Hearing that here first on Mighty Marvel Geeks. Wow. Now, with the Stark Expo, this isn't really the first time a Marvel character's been, quote-unquote, in the parks. Wasn't Spider-Man involved, or didn't he take Mary Jane back in, like, issue 304?
Yeah, actually. And funny you should mention that, Mike, because I just so happened to have that issue here in front of me. Yeah, and you know, and this has nothing to do with any project we're working on. This is just me being a fanboy. And I was curious if, because we're going into Disneyland or Hong Kong Disneyland with Iron Man, if the Marvel characters had ever visited the Disney parks before. Because right, I mean, if Daredevil's on the rooftops of San Francisco and Peter Parker's swinging past the Empire State Building, then presumably Disneyland exists in their world. Walt Disney World exists in their world. They could go to these places as characters. And so I did a little digging and I found Amazing Spider-Man number 304. And this actually, I believe it's from 1988, which predates Splash Mountain. And what's funny about this moment, it's like one page where he goes to Disneyland, and in the story, and I don't want to root for you guys. You guys should try and track it down. It's hilarious. Very 80s / early 90s. You know, Peter Parker is basically hawking his new book, which is a collection of his photographs of Spider-Man, and he's doing a West Coast promotional tour. And so he comes out to the West Coast, meets up with Mary Jane, and they spend the day at Disneyland. In that one page, you'll see some very interesting fashion that Mary Jane is rocking. Some very big hair, as you can imagine. They're on a flume ride, and if you're not familiar with what a flume ride is, that's basically Splash Mountain. But they're not on Splash Mountain. There's a chain link fence next to them. The castle has some very odd looking red flags in front of it. In one panel, there's actually a giant volcano behind them. Presumably that is supposed to be the Matterhorn, but I don't know if that much research was actually went into it. It looks like a volcano to me. So it's pretty hilarious. Spider-Man has has visited Disneyland. So I think, you know, as we tie that back into, not tying it back, but as we talk about the Iron Man experience, the notion that Disneyland exists in their world is very intriguing to us. And it's a different way of thinking about how we tell our stories. And I think that's philosophically how we're approaching the Iron Man experience. That Tony knows where he is. He knows he's at Disneyland. He knows what the past might be, if there are any connections there. And he knows that Hong Kong is a city that's always thinking about the future and what things he might bring and share with the world. So it's a lot of fun. So very different for us.
Now, Ken, you said you had some news for us.
Apparently, I was reading that it is going to air when S.H.I.E.L.D. is not on. I guess when they're in their break weeks or whatever, that's when they're going to air Agent Carter.
Okay.
In between the fall and spring run of the series is what they're going to do.
Okay. So that means, as well as it was announced last week, and we apologize for bringing the news late, and not have it last week, but like we said last week, you know, work schedules kind of forced us to record a little earlier. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has also been renewed for a second season.
You guys all caught up?
What's that?
Are you all caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I am.
Are you loving it as much as I am?
I enjoy it.
Okay.
I enjoy it. But then again, you put a superhero TV show, superhero movie, it says right here, sucker. I'm all for it. Cartoon, sucker. I'm probably one of the few people who actually watched The Cape when it was on NBC for the one or two episodes it was.
Yeah.
As you probably heard us say on the show, the first half of the season was slow, and they probably could have pulled out some stuff to speed it up a little bit. But what they've done since the whole Captain America crossover with the Captain America movie, I'm digging the pace. I'm loving where things are going, and I think it's going to definitely help set up season two. I'll be curious to see how they draw in Guardians, if they do, into season two, but definitely help guide it towards Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah, I mean, the brilliance of being able to connect what's happening on TV to what's happening on film. So for those of us who are fanboys, really, to be able to watch those movies and then not have the story end, right? And typically, Marvel's already creating movies at an astronomical pace. You know, I mean, because usually you have to wait about 2 years between, you know, sequels. But we get a new Marvel movie, like, every 5 months or so.
Yep.
Right. But then now we're going to even string those together with a television show that brings, you know, that allows that story to continue. So we're getting a new chapter of this story every single week. So you saw what happened to Nick Fury at the end of Cap 2, or you didn't, Mike.
Right.
But now we're going to get to see him show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, oh, we get to see more of what's happening with Fury. So really brilliant. You know, Jeff Loeb's an amazing storyteller. If you're familiar with his comic book work, I mean, he's done such amazing stuff.
Yes.
And then to bring that sensibility to television. And I'm with you. You know, it started off kind of slow, right? Took a while to find its footing. But I think what happened, the events of Captain America 2 couldn't have been better for the television show.
Right.
Because I think, you know, as I was watching this show, I was trying to buy into the notion that these five characters, or however many there were a part of this larger unit. We're a part of the Triskelion and all these other things that were happening. And so now to have disbanded S.H.I.E.L.D. and to have your five, you know, heavies as, you know, on the run, basically, that's perfect. Right. That's perfect for the show. It works so much to their advantage that now it, you know, and then to introduce Hydra and all these things, it's a lot of fun. It's become must-see TV week to week.
To kind of go from Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mission Impossible, to now A-Team, Mod Squad type feel is great. Well, we thank you, Brian, for coming on to the show. Where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, gosh, I'm the worst at, like, social media and that kind of stuff. I guess if you want to get a hold of me, you can see my artwork on DeviantArt. I have a DeviantArt page. I believe it's deviantart.com/batcraws, I believe. And then LinkedIn, if you want to connect with me professionally, I'm on LinkedIn as well. I don't do the Twitter. I'm not on the Facebooks. I'm terrible about that kind of stuff. I just, frankly, I don't have a lot of time. And So the little time I do have, I try to spend with my family and reading lots of comic books. So doesn't leave me a lot of other free time, you know.
Ken, where can they find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter sometimes, at K-A-M-A-R-C-Y.
And of course, you can find me at Marvel Geeks on Twitter. And again, we thank Brian for giving us the little exclusive tease of the Iron Man experience. Looking forward to see how this continues to develop as we get closer to that 2016 opening day. For the project. So until next time, check out the rest of the shows here on Sorcerer Radio. Upcoming at Star Wars Weekends, you'll be able to find me, possibly even Ken, at some of the meet and greet areas with other Sorcerer Radio DJs. So check us out on Facebook, keep track on Sorcerer Radio Fun Zone to find out where we're going to be. And until next time, we say goodnight.
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.